You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I like blushed a little bit when you said that, because I don't think I've openly said that before. I have said in interviews that like I'm doing more now than I used to, but I'm definitely doing way more than I used to. And it's very satisfying, though, because you can't complain about things, because not everything, but a lot of things are in your control. So if they don't go the way you want them to go, you can only blame yourself.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you've been having a glorious week so far. I most certainly have been. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter, and I have teamed up with them to bring you Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops Brutal Montreal, which is happening on December 17th at Theatre de Corona here in Montreal. That night, my band, Cryptopsy, will be performing alongside my friends in The Agonist, The Great Sabatini, Necrotic Mutation, and Burning the Oppressor. All night long, you will be able to enjoy killer brews from BG, Brasserie Urbaine, Missorum Brassatorium, Brasserie du Bas-Canada, Sir John Brewing Company, 5e Baron, and Brassard de Montréal. This is an event you do not want to miss. Tickets are selling extremely quickly, so if you do want to come, make sure that you pick up your ticket via the link in the description of this podcast. I'm super stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. More than that, I'd also like you to rate it and write a review. Now, why exactly do I want you to do that? Well, you have to imagine that when someone is looking for a new podcast to listen to, what do? They scroll down, they read the reviews, and if those reviews are favorable and reflect stuff that they love, well, they're most probably going to give that podcast a chance. So by you writing a review for the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, you can actually be the one that sways someone into becoming a brand new Vox and Hops head, and that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be back with Vicky Sirakis, the vocalist of The Agonist, and her new project that she just announced, Sixth Sense. We recorded this episode live on her Twitch channel a few weeks ago, and I'm very excited to present it to all of you. This is Vox and Hops episode number 305.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I am back with Vicky Sirakis of The Agonist. Her new project, Sixth Sense. We are actually recording this right now, live on her Twitch stream. I think this is so damn cool. Vicky, how are you doing?
I'm great. This is so weird. It's like Inception, sort of? So it's a... interviewception. I don't know what's happening. It's awesome.
I love it. You have been so goddamn busy. I haven't seen you in a long time, actually. I remember we are going to talk about the last time we hung out later in the interview, but I definitely want to start things off with a shitty question so that we can move forward and have a lot more fun afterwards. But you're one of the people that did good with this question, and in regards to this question, how did you cope with the glorious year of 2020, which has now lingered into becoming most of 2021 as well? How have you been coping with your time away from performing?
Well, I'm on Twitch. Yeah. That happened. That was actually like the most recent endeavor that I got into in 2021, I guess. But I've been thinking about it for a while, and I think that's what happened. As soon as I came home from a tour that got canceled that was supposed to start in a week, I basically just said, okay, no more excuses. Let's do stuff that, you know, you've been thinking of doing but couldn't find the time, or you were on the road or whatever. So just content, creating content, covers, creating an amazing community on Patreon and Twitch, and just like, basically switching over to music full time but from my basement instead.
It's impressive what you've built, and you've gotten into killer shape throughout the pandemic. I keep saying on the podcast that there's two shapes that you can come out of COVID in shape or out of shape. You seem to have taken towards the in shape, so congrats on that. I'm leaning on the other side of things because of the gorgeous beer that I'm addicted to. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, you mentioned earlier before we started recording what you were drinking. I would love for you to introduce your beer for the Vox and Hops listeners that will be listening to this at a later date.
Yeah, so I am drinking Three Floyds Brewery. The brewery is actually like 30 minutes from where I live. So
amazing.
I get their stuff all the time. I completely forgot. I knew it was a stout, but in my mind, I thought it was like an 8%, a 9%, you know. I'm like, I could start the stream with an 8%. Turns out it's 13.2%.
Very impressive.
It's I'm not even sure how to pronounce this properly. Yella Rari?
Okay.
I don't know. It's a barrel-aged pale imperial stout with vanilla beans, coffee, and cocoa nibs.
Sounds delicious.
It is.
Three Floyds rules. I was so happy, very happy to have them on the podcast a few months ago. Just, I looked up to them so much. They are the kings of metal and beer, and very, very happy that Albert from Decibel introduced me to them so we could have that chat. On my side, I was at Brewski yesterday.
Nice.
And whenever I go to Brewski, I always end up picking up some beer because it's just so damn good. I was actually there with Jerry Monk, the Vox and Hops metal architect that puts together all the playlists that I share all the time. He was visiting from Dallas. True pleasure to hang out with him. So this is Hop Run. It is a 7.2% IPA with El Dorado, Triumph, and Belma, and Cashmere hops. Now, I would like to ask this question when I have return guests. It's, how has your craft beer palate evolved since the last time we had a conversation on Vox and Hops?
I don't know if my palate has evolved. Like, I feel like my palate is probably the same. I don't know, unless it's a little bit more fine-tuned because I'm getting older. But I think since the first and last time I was on the stream, there's more adventurous stuff out. Like, I think back then, for example, those like super juicy IPAs that are like orange juice didn't even exist, or maybe they were really rare. Yeah, we're finding crazier and crazier beers that you're like, ooh, this is either going to be amazing or god awful.
Absolutely. And it's so cheers to you. Let's start with the cheers and then we'll dig deeper. Smells amazing. It's creamy, a little chalkiness to it. Ultra tropical fruits, just really, really killer. And their can art has really evolved throughout the year, so I'm very stoked about that. Very stoked about Brewski. Every time I'm anywhere near there, love going there and talking to their brewer Derek. He's the best. I also, something we talked about the last time we were together, I asked you about the soundtrack of your youth, but I don't believe that we covered your first show. Do you remember the first live music experience you went to go see?
Oh, that I went to go see, like as a I mean, I'm sure I went to like some kind of concerts that, you know, parents or friends dragged me to when I was really young, so I can't really remember those. Maybe like the first show that I went to that I chose to go to was actually a festival in Greece, Rockwave Festival. I don't know if it exists anymore, but I don't think it does. Anyways, and that year it was Marilyn Manson headlining with Garbage playing right before them and a few other bands. But yeah.
That's pretty sick.
It was sick. And I was like 14.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Super cool.
How about your first time on stage? Do you remember being on stage for the first time and how that went down and if you were prepared enough? Were you nervous? All those glorious things all wrapped up in one.
Well, if we mean stage, like you mean like playing metal or any stage?
Any stage. And then we could move on towards your metal.
Right. Well, I mean, I can't tell you how old I was, but I was very, very young because I was like one of those kids that was in all like the school plays and choirs and stuff like that. So
me too.
Maybe I was 4 or 5 and I don't remember it. I just remember this feeling of not wanting to do it. because I was very shy, very introverted. And I didn't really care for singing. I mean, like when you're 5 or 6, you don't know what you want to do in your life. So I didn't really care for it too much. And I didn't really like being in the public eye. So, but I did it because I wanted to, like, I have a hard time saying no. So I wanted like my teachers and my parents and everyone to be happy. So I'm like, yeah, okay. I didn't cause a fit over it. You know,
they knew it was good for you. That's why they knew that somewhere down the line, you'd be sitting in the basement singing on the internet. How about your first metal experience on stage, screaming in a metal band? Do you remember that show?
Well, screaming in a metal band was The Agnes. That's wow. The first time I've Yeah. I had never done that. People always think it's really like fascinating when I say that, like, it's my first actual, like, real band that wasn't, you know, like a session thing or a studio project or whatever, but that's the truth. And, I don't know why they would choose to hire someone that has only been screaming for 6 months. Like, you gotta be a little bit crazy to do something like that. Well, hire someone. They didn't hire me. Sorry. Like, ask me to join the band, whatever. But yeah, I remember it. It wasn't a great experience. I didn't like it.
did you feel prepared? Okay, now I feel guilty because of our time together working on screaming together, which we spoke about last time I had you.
That really did help, I'm not gonna lie. But I just think that time and experience are like things you just can't get it. Like the type of screamer and the how good you're going to sound in 6 months, it can't compare it to like 6 years, you know, no matter who teaches you, no matter what they show you. And screaming, you know, in your basement or in the studio for a recording is totally different than going on stage and screaming song after song night after night. Like,
and you're moving,
I remember,
and the crowd is there.
Yeah. And you're running on adrenaline, mm-hmm. and that just makes you push even more. Mm-hmm. And especially if you don't have perfect sound. And my first shows with The Agonist was like summer festivals.
Wow.
So summer festivals.
So what was, do you remember the first one? What fest was that? And how big was that?
Actually the first one was a venue show.
Okay.
Actually like right. But the third one was like Brutal Assault or something like that.
I love that festival.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But you know, like what festivals are like, you show mm-hmm. up, you're lucky if you get a line check, you know, so what is perfect sound? You're not going to have perfect sound. So like, I can't hear too well. B, I don't have experience. C, I'm terrified, shy of like this crowd of people that I'm seeing. And it was a nightmare. I mean, I had fun. I had tons of fun on the tour, but it was a nightmare.
Well, I'm glad that it's gotten better since then.
Yes.
Which is a good thing. That's what we want. We want to get better at what we're doing, right? I want to circle back to beer. Something cool happened this past summer. You were a part of Vox and Hops' Brutal North America, where I paired metal breweries with Vox and Hops alumni, the past guests of the podcast, to create your own beer. Can you tell me about your experience with that? How did you enjoy it? What is your take on being a part of Brutal North America?
Oh, it was super fun. Like, I think the idea was, like, first of all, really ambitious, and I'm happy that you pulled it off, because, like... It can be hard coordinating with your own band members, which are like 4 people, but like how many bands was it on that? Like total?
22.
Like 20. Yeah. And each brewery. So like 44 different entities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's insane. And it happened like so fast, I find, too.
It was a 4-month hustle, really. And it did take a long time, because every message that I would have to send, I'd have to send to 44 people. I found my ways of doing it, but it was cool. I'm happy that I have had. Did you enjoy the beer though?
Yeah. So getting into that, it was a really cool experience. What was really awesome is that, like, I don't live in Montreal, but coincidentally, I was in Montreal to record our new music and film a music video and all that. And that was the time that the brewing was happening. So I was able to go to the brewery and kind of see how it's done. And that was an experience in itself, because it's like, well, where else are you going to be able to see that? Like, not not every brewery is just going to open their door and be like, hey, come in, let me show you how it's done. Uh-huh. Like, yeah. So that was super fun. And I actually didn't get to try the beer
because
I left. No, I tried it eventually, but I didn't get to try it like as it was ready, as it was fresh. Unfortunately, I had it like 2 months later, like the next time I was in Montreal, and it was still very good. However, my bandmates told me that it was like even better when, you know, they first got it. But oh, well,
I think I still have one or two of them left, and it holds up. I used one in an interview the other day. It was delicious. Just still awesome. Still very cool. So that was the first time you ever went into like a brew room.
Yeah.
Amazing. So talk to me about that. And what is it? Is something that interests you more now? The science behind making beer?
Yeah, I mean, it's like chemistry, really. Oh, well, fun chemistry.
It's like cooking, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'd go out of my way to do it for myself. But, like, if the opportunity presents again and they're like, hey, we can make a beer. You want to come with us to see how this is done? Because, like, we saw how an IPA was made. I'm sure it's a different process for all different kinds of beers. So definitely something very interesting.
You were basically the first two people that I hit up. When I had the idea, I wrote Le Femme Watteau, and I was like, is this an idea that's going to work? Does this make sense? Please tell me I'm crazy if I'm crazy. And they said, no, this is a good idea. You should do this. And then I hit up you guys. I gave them like an option, like, do you want this band or this band? And they chose you guys. So I hit you up, and it was like an immediate yes if the beer was good. Danny was very adamant that the beer had to be good, though.
Of course. Yeah, you don't want to like have a first sip of your beer and be like, yeah, it's the best thing I've ever had.
That's why you don't film the first reaction when you drink a new beer. That's you don't want that. You always lie and pretend that it's the first reaction.
True.
Which I've done. Of course. Let's talk about what's going on right here, Twitch. In a year, or just over a year, basically, you've really built a strong following on Twitch. You started your Patreon, and then from there, it transitioned into Twitch very quickly. How did that happen? How did you end up becoming so popular on Twitch? Why did you move on to Twitch?
So popular, Matt. I'm not that popular. No, honestly, I was thinking of doing Twitch like way before, like years before. Same thing with Patreon. I'm one of those people where it's just like overthink everything and make sure everything's perfect. And then big surprise, things aren't perfect. We still end up having technical difficulties. But yeah, I was thinking about it for a while, and I felt like I didn't want to do everything all at once because, like, you know, you got to take steps, and people's attention spans aren't that great. You can't just be like one day you come out and you're like, here's new music and I have a Patreon and I'm streaming on Twitch and I'm doing all these things and you drop everything that you're doing and just follow me 24/7. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, you got to slowly build towards that. And I decided to start with Patreon because I felt like it was a safer way to kind of test the waters and see what I'm doing. And because, like, I started doing streams privately on Patreon first, and that community started growing. I started seeing that people on Patreon really enjoyed the streams. And I was like, okay, maybe it's time to take this on Twitch. And also, like, I had to make some money to invest in some gear because it's not cheap.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, the routing. Thankfully, I'm just a vocalist, so I only need one mic. I don't know how drummers do it on Twitch. It's absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, to look and sound good, you have to spend some money on your stream. So basically, yeah, step by step, slowly. And then when I eventually started streaming on Twitch, I already had a few people that would be there, you know, maybe not every single time, but frequently, you know. So yeah, it's been great.
What would be some of the biggest challenges when being a Twitch streamer? Finding content, I can imagine, is tedious and scary at times. Do you have moments when you don't even know what you're going to stream because you know you have to stream?
You know, that was something that was concerning me. When I first started, I was doing like music, just music. So like either recording sessions or practice sessions or just music nonstop because I felt like you're a vocalist. That's what people want from you. And then I got really, really sick in August. And I got COVID. Mm-hmm. And it was fine. Yeah, it was fine. It was like very mild compared to other things that I've heard. However, my main side effect was that I just had this splitting headache all day long, and being on the computer was very hard for me to do, like, or screens in general, like it was bad. So I had to like cut down from streaming a little bit, and I had to switch my content because I couldn't perform, you know? So then I started just like hanging out and watching videos with people. Like, I wouldn't say reaction streams because I'm not a reactor, but like people suggest songs that they want, and then I check them out, like things I've never heard or seen before. And I just kind of like tell them what I think or do an analysis or whatever. But I saw in that people still care. Mm-hmm. And they just, I feel like fans or friends, as I like to call a lot of my community, they want to connect with you as a person. And it's like, it's great when you go on the stream and you show your craft and your art and you perform and this and that, but like genuinely, like they want to connect with you as a person. So if I just come on the stream and I'm talking nonsense and we're just watching videos, they're perfectly cool with that too. Yeah.
Because basically they're in your house hanging out with you.
Yeah. And I think that's what people want. Like they want, like, think about your idols, let's say, in music. I'm sure it wasn't just their musical output that drew you to them. It was like their character, or maybe things they said in an interview, or like this aura that they had. Mm-hmm. That you're like, I can connect with you on a level, or I think I can connect with you because you haven't actually met that person, on another level that goes beyond just like my admiration or respect for what you do as a musician.
No, it does. And as you were saying that, I haven't really, like, Vox and Hops had started when I was touring. The pandemic really boosted Vox and Hops for me, and I'm very interested to go on tour and to meet, you know, Vox and Hops heads coming out to the show. So I'm interested in when you're going to go on tour and all these people that you've basically been hanging out three times a week throughout the past year or so are going to come up and hang out with you.
Yeah.
Are you ready for that? Because it might be intense.
No, I'm super excited. Actually, this weekend, three of my patrons are meeting each other for the first time.
No way.
Yeah, like in Portugal, like one of them is from Spain and they're going to Portugal and they're like meeting up. So like, I think it's super cool. Like, here's this community that you're building, and not only are you connecting with them, but they're connecting with each other as well. And some of my patrons I've already met on tour. Like, the first thing they did when they joined was like post the picture from the merch table that we took together, you know, after the show. And some others, like maybe because we've never played in the city, or maybe they discovered the Agonist after me being there, but for whatever reason, it's like I haven't met them yet, but I'm sure when the time comes and I'm playing there that they'll show up, of course. And it's exciting. It's very exciting.
I think it's awesome. Obviously, I was heavily inspired by Jamie Josta, the Josta Show interview, mm-hmm. with metal artists. When you were structuring your Twitch, or when you even just now, are there other streamers that you are inspired by that are influenced you, that have influenced you to create content to run your streams this way?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I was one of those people that when I got on Twitch, I hadn't really spent time on Twitch before.
I love it.
I liked the idea of Twitch. I liked the fact that you could just turn on your camera and your microphone and just be you and be random and perform, because I think that's super important too. I think it takes balls, to be quite honest, to just go on a stream and perform and show that you can do it, because it's like there's no editing it.
No.
Like, if you fuck up, you fuck up. That's it, right? So I was really like liking the idea of Twitch, and also that it's like, when you stream and you're done. It's not like you filmed a video and then you have to sit there and go through the footage and edit it and color correct. It's like, no, it's all real time. It's done. And you can either do it or you can't do it. Can't do it. And I've known a few people that, you know, started maybe doing Twitch, didn't like it or whatever, and gave up. It's really not for everyone. But to answer your question, I didn't have like specific people that I looked up to. I just knew that at the time, like Matt Heafy obviously was like one of the big streamers, and Herman Lee, of course. And I saw, like, I didn't ever watch their streams, but I saw like the snippets that they would put later on social media. And I was like, this is really cool. And like the whole gaming sort of aspect to it, because Twitch was created for gamers.
Absolutely.
The music community has just grown the past 2 years, but it was created for gamers. So like me being a gamer, like specifically in my youth, mostly when I had more time for it, found it really, really appealing. So I just knew I wanted to do it. And I'm happy that I didn't watch too many streamers and see what they were doing, because it helped me kind of come up with my own ideas without like not purposefully copying them. But you know what I mean? Like when you watch a bunch of people do stuff, then you start thinking of doing the same things, and it's not like you're copying them on purpose. It's just like, you can't help it. You're like, you saw it. Oh, that's cool. I should do that too. Whereas if you don't put yourself in that spot, you can, I don't know, improvise and come up with your own things.
Absolutely. Obviously the big question, the question I've gotten, and I know that I'm going to keep it up, is when you're touring, what's going to happen to the streams?
I mean, yeah. I'd love to keep it up. I'd love to like do like either backstage streams or sound check, or maybe even the show if that's possible. Although I know on a technical level, there's so much involved. I'm happy I bought a really, really powerful laptop like 3 weeks ago. It was funny because I went on Twitch and I'm like, I need a new laptop because the one I have sucks and I can't like stream on tour with it. It just doesn't have the capabilities. And I put a donation goal for like $3,000, and this insane community gave me the money in one day.
No way.
I put the goal for like 2 or 3 months.
Amazing. Congrats to you, and thank the community for supporting you so well so that you can keep this going and they can keep hanging out with you when you're out on the road.
Exactly. I think when you show people that, like, look, I'm not just taking your money and, you know, drinking beers with it. No offense, obviously, we drink beers, but I just mean, you know, you didn't get to even pocket that money. You got it, and then the next day it was spent. And it was spent towards the thing that they love seeing you for. So, it was great.
Let's talk about the Agonist. New record. A good record. Mm-hmm. I've heard the whole thing because my guitarist is Chris Johnson, and he likes...
Oh, I thought because the label sent it to you.
Oh, I guess that could also probably be an option, but I heard it back in the summer. It's some of my favorite material. Days Before the World Wept.
Yeah.
October 15th via Napalm Records, of course. I know you guys very well, so stop me if this is too much, because I know a lot of back stuff that I don't know if should be public. I know that for this record, you really took the lead on it, which would be the first time that this has happened in the Agonist. Danny Marino had a baby, and he really sort of just told you guys that he wanted to obviously still be a part of the band and be involved, but he didn't want to run everything as much as he used to. And he probably will come back and take over again. Not over, but take on more responsibilities for future material. But for this album in particular, you took the lead. Can you talk to me about that, please?
I like blushed a little bit when you said that, because I don't think I've openly said that before. I have said in interviews that like I'm doing more now than I used to, but I'm definitely doing way more than I used to. And it's very satisfying though, because you can't complain about things, because not everything, but a lot of things are in your control. So if they don't go the way you want them to go, you can only blame yourself.
Absolutely.
And I'm okay with that as a person, because I really hate giving people responsibilities or someone else having a responsibility for something, not doing it the way like maybe I had hoped for, and then holding a little bit of a grudge. And this is not just with my bandmates. This is in general. I'm like one of those people that maybe I become too meticulous with things, that it's better for me to spend my entire day going crazy over it so that I can just blame myself and not blame anyone else for it not being what it's supposed to be. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. Being the streamer now too, it makes sense too.
Yeah.
Everything yeah. is you. Yeah. It's you that. I think it's interesting though to tackle these new roles in a band, and you guys are very. I can't commend the Agonists enough because you guys keep a lot of stuff in house. You know, Simon does a great job with social media. You got Chris Kells, part of the Vox and Hops crew, doing all the video content, directing, and then doing all your videos and stuff. It's very commendable. I think it's very, very...
Thank you.
It's the new world of bands where everyone can do stuff on their own. And here you are bringing in all these extra things. You also started your own merch company. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's like specifically a merch company, but that was the reason for it. So like I started it with my husband, Robbie, because we have all these projects. Different projects, not just music. And we were thinking like, okay, if we want to have merch for each of these projects, we would need to set up a different page for each of these things. And let's say that there's someone that's a fan and wants to support us as people. So like they want the Agonist merch, they want Vicky merch, they want Sixth Sense, which we'll get into, but different, you know, projects from both of us. They would have to go on separate pages and pay for shipping for each of these things. We're like, let's create something for ourselves where we can put all our projects and send all our merch out. And when that started, I didn't even think of like having the Agonist on there or anyone else. It was mostly just for us. And then it just kind of spiraled and more people wanted to be a part of it. Because the other thing that we have on this website, it's like merch aside, we have like a contact page for artists. So it's like you get to put your bio and your links and a contact form so people can contact you for whatever service you're offering. So like we have affiliates and stuff like that. And more people wanted to be a part of that because we're like, we'll just host you on the website. We'll put up your links. We'll connect your personal email to the contact form. Whoops. So that when someone messages you, it's coming straight to you.
Amazing.
But yeah, and people were like, yeah, I'll be a part of that. And it's great because you get to feed through like those contact forms where they're like, yeah, we want a guest vocal. Is Vicky available? Where it's like totally like unpro, totally like not thought out, not anything. And you're like, I'm not even going to respond to this.
I'm sorry, Ben from X country, but you got to write better emails.
Yeah. And there's no scene there, right? They just sent a message on a contact form and it's good. It's good.
You feel okay with that.
Yeah, I feel okay with that. And yes, long story short, it spiraled. And it grew into something bigger. And since we're based in the US, which I think is very important for Canadians, you know, specifically, like I said to my bandmates as well, like, why don't I take care of our merch? Like, I'm in the US, shipping is cheaper. There's more people here in the States that like want our stuff versus Canada. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds simple. It hasn't been simple, but it's worth it.
It's really cool because a lot of people, myself included, just affiliate ourselves to the big merch companies. And I just hooked up with Indie Merch Store.
Yeah.
If not, I probably would have hooked up with you.
No, that's fine.
But the deals were going down in any way. So I just want to, something that I'm so happy about, and this is just me. I live in a condo here and I don't have merch in my house anymore, and that makes me so goddamn happy.
Yeah.
So what is your house? Is there a room that's just stacked full of boxes of everything?
It's a horror show right now. Like,
it looks, everything that's not on camera is a disaster.
Basically. Like, it's always been a disaster in the sense that it's a pretty small house for everything that we're doing, and we have two dogs as well. Like, this basement area, I wish I could say it's my studio room, but it's like this corner is a studio room. The other corner is a workout room. Mm-hmm. That back there, the abyss that's black, is like a living room / filming room where there's a black background and I film all my videos that when people see, they're like shocked.
Yeah.
Like, how did you do that? Yes. And then the merch room, our guest room basically became a merch room. So if any friends are coming over and need a place to stay, like that's just impossible right now. But we are actually looking to move soon. And
closer
yeah,
to
we're
Three
looking
Floyds.
No, actually very far from Three Floyds, unfortunately for that, but fortunately for other reasons. We're thinking of moving down to Florida, which
sounds crazy.
Really?
Is this for wrestling for Robbie?
That's not like the main reason.
Okay.
It just like we were like thinking of more like midland states like Tennessee sort of. Mm-hmm. And Robbie mentioned Georgia. I'm like, why would we go to Georgia? He's like, because it's close to Florida. And I'm like, well, then why not just go to Florida? Like, at least you can have a beach. Because, like, I don't really like humid and hot weather unless I can be next to a beach or have a pool or something. Because I grew up in Greece, right? Mm-hmm, so that was always an option. If it's a super hot day and you have time, just go to the beach. So why would I suffer in an area with humidity and bugs and not have a beach next to me? So
they have lots of peanuts. No, but peanuts. I said peanuts. I did. But
yeah. So we're looking into Florida now. We'll see.
That's amazing. Back to the record. You worked yet again with my guitarist, the best producer in the world, Chris Donaldson. Talk to me about that decision of sticking with him. I know why you did. I'm just curious if there's extra reasons why.
No, it's a no-brainer at this point. Chris, I see Chris as like, he's a guy I can relate to on so many levels because like I see like my own growth since I met him and I see his growth since I met him and it's just like insane. And he was already good when I'm like, he already knew how to mix. He already knew how to make you sound good and like now it's even better. And working with him this time around, I believe if you ask him, it was like he sent over his first mix to the band and the guys were just kind of like, yeah, sounds good. Like, like the feedback, the notes were like nothing compared to the past. Because it's like he knows us so well and he knows what a good metal album has to sound like. And he just does it.
That's amazing. It was like that with Tome 2 from Cryptopsy as well. He sent us the first mix and we were like, I was with Flo and this never happens. And it was like, it's perfect. Let's do it. That's it. And that was it.
That's so good. And I know like Chris, he's probably just sitting there like,
oh, it could be better. And he's stroking his beard. Oh,
of course. Of course. He told me like last week that I was in Montreal. He told me that the mix on the EP sucks.
Yeah. I'm the other. That sounds like Chris. I do. This is something that I don't know if you know the answer. I don't know the answer. Why do you think he's a bit underrated?
Multiple reasons. I think A, because he's Canadian and like people think like metal and they think either US or they think Europe, depending on the style of metal that you're going for. And Canada, it's so weird because Canada I find has like the best of both worlds. Like European metal is very popular in Montreal.
Absolutely.
You have a lot of European sounding bands, but then the mixing aspect of it, the sound is more American. And like that's the best of both worlds because like American productions to me are superior to European productions because they hit hard. It sounds metal, it sounds heavy. Like Europe style metal is like too clean, it's too soft, it's good, it's very good, but like I can relate more to an American sounding production. And so that's what I find weird because like Canada and like Montreal specifically kind of brings both elements there. But I think it goes back to not, how do I say this and be nice about it? not everyone's ears are good or as good. And when it comes to choosing a producer or someone you want to work with, you look more at their resume, at their location, at the other bands that they've worked with, not necessarily that sound good, but just, oh, they're famous, you know? And you don't listen and you don't see like, what is it that this guy's doing that's actually better than this guy and deserves three or four times more money for it? So I think Chris, and not only Chris, any person that's not maybe like located in a hot spot in the US, like, you know, LA or where's metal? Where else is metal growing right now? I don't know. I think Nashville is growing right now and maybe a few other cities.
There's definitely a few hot producers, that's for damn sure.
Yeah. So I think...
So you're saying location is one of the reasons he's not...
What location else? Is one of the reasons, and I think he's just too nice. He's too goddamn nice, that guy. Which it's like... It's cool. It's super cool. But it's like when you deal with someone that's dicking you around and they're taking advantage of you, it's like you gotta stop being so nice. And I tell him this all the time. I'm like, Chris, I know you're nice to me, but you're nice to everyone. Like,
he's the best.
Don't be so nice.
He did tell me that you, because some of these tracks that are a part of this were, I don't want to call them leftover tracks, but were tracks that were left
yeah.
from a previous album. Yet you re-recorded your harsh vocals on it. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, yeah. So to answer like the first part, they weren't left over in that sense, because I don't want people to take this the wrong way. They were purposefully left out because we were No. Here, I will explain this. We were looking at a 12, 13, you know, song album again, which the Agonist has always done. And we're living in these times right now where like people are just dropping singles or shorter albums. And I've seen it happen again and again, where it's like you put out a full length and you have over 10 songs. The songs that are towards the end of the album have like absolutely like no streams in comparison, or no views, or some people have never even heard them. So I told the band, I'm like, why are we doing this? Why are we putting out so many songs that people aren't going to hear? Let's choose a few songs from Orphans and let's just not put them on Orphans. Let's save them for later, because I know they're good and I want people to actually hear them. And one of those songs is actually one of our singles on this album, or EP. So it never would have been a single if it was on Orphans, right? Yes. So that was the reason we left them out. And I redid them because I did my vocals for Orphans in 2018. And this is now 2021. This is a 3-year difference vocally. So I wanted that to reflect on the recording as well.
Was there much of a big difference from
yes.
that you hear or that everyone would hear? I guess it only matters what you feel about your material, but do you think other people would notice as well?
I think everyone at this point is noticing. Like I did a one take performance of In Vertigo. It's on my YouTube channel, and I did it actually like a month after recording the EP. And a few people that saw it said in the comments that it's like noticeably better than the album version. And this was a one take performance. So I would like to think that all the vocals that I did on the EP are even better than that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing. Donaldson told me that he loves working with you. You come in unbelievably prepared. You know everything that you're going to do. You know all the harm. It's like you are perfectly prepped. So hats off to you for that. Yeah. I think it's really, really, really freaking awesome.
Thank you.
I think it's awesome. I really, really think it's awesome.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
Let's dance into a shitty question.
Yes.
A question that I don't know what the question is.
Oh.
Here's the context of that. Last time I had you on, we recorded at St. Buck, and then I mentioned the last time we saw each other, I'm pretty sure it was when Ingested came through Montreal at Fofun Electric, the CBGBs of Montreal. I got drunk. I think everyone that night had a lot of fun enjoying a bunch of craft beer. The Ingested boys were partying. You were there. And you mentioned to me that I did not ask the right question.
I did?
Yeah.
I must have been drunk then, because I don't remember that.
So, of course, my question to you right now is, what is the question that I should have asked that I didn't ask?
I don't even remember saying that to you. I need context.
There was no context. That's the thing. We were talking. You were reflecting upon my interview with you.
Yeah.
And you said that I didn't ask you the right question, but I never got what the right question was from you.
I don't even know what I was thinking at that time. The right question, because that seems very specific, right? Like if I had said the right questions, That would have been more of a general thing, but I said the right question, like singular. Like what could drunk Vicky could have been thinking of right then?
I don't know. I was just curious, and as this question was a trap. I always have one spicy shitty question, and this one for today.
No. I mean, it's so cool because I'm like now actually like trying to think of what I could have possibly been thinking 2.5 years ago.
How can he remember? I have a vivid memory of certain things for certain reasons. It's just the way, just the way
there
that
has to have been some context though. Like there's gotta be a reason I said that.
I don't know. I don't remember. So that part I don't remember. I just remember us sitting together, but it's like, you know what it's like at a bar. People are loud.
Yeah.
People we get cut off to, you know what I mean? Like we get like conversations don't get completed. And I think it was one of those circumstances. So I don't quite remember the context, but I do remember you saying that. And it stuck. Huh. It stuck with me. So
I'm so sorry about that.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Like I wish I could remember.
Let's dance into Sixth Sense, a rap metal project. Why?
Yeah. Why not? No, I don't
just
know.
Teasing, you know?
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm like really serious about the why not. Like I think there's this like idea from. Specifically, mostly, I guess, metal elitists just being like rap metal shit or whatever. Like, it's not true metal.
I don't know. Limp Bizkit has some bangers.
They do. Like, listen to the guitar work.
Absolutely. But, absolutely.
Yeah. But my point is that I think, and I say this all the time, and I think you will get this because you're an extreme vocalist and you know this, that a lot of like the flows that you do with your vocals are pretty rap based.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I find it so funny that there's like guys that listen to metal and like, you know, when I say metal, I mean like screaming bands, and they say that like rap is shit. But then I'm like, just remove the distortion off of all those bands you listen to. And those vocalists are essentially rapping. So what is it that you don't like about rap? Because it's kind of the same thing, really, especially when we're going into like more groovy metal bands, you know, it really is just like a harsher rap that metal bands are doing. So anyways, that's the one thing I say all the time, that to anyone that has to like want to talk shit about rapping, I'm like, you listen to it all the time. It's just covered with distortion and you don't realize it. And also the fact that I think a lot of like bands, like you mentioned Limp Bizkit, there's like Linkin Park, there's Korn, some elements of Slipknot, like all that whole like new metal thing that was happening like late 90s, early 2000s, that I think got a lot of us into metal.
I'm a new metal child. I'm not shy to say that at all. And I'm loving the resurgence of bands like Tala. And Tetrarch just killing it right now. They're super, super hyper popular. So you're right on, and you've been doing this for a while. Like, I know you don't want me to talk about that, but
he has all the inside info.
But talk to me about how this came. I don't like asking origin stories, but this one I find interesting. So what can you tell us about how Sixth Sense came together?
Yeah, I mean, it was completely. I wasn't looking for it. It was this band from Montreal, used to be called Keychain. They had just lost their vocalist. They were searching for a new vocalist. Here comes Robbie. He auditions for that band, and they just really, really loved his vocals. They loved his rapping. They loved his screaming. They loved his lyrics. And Bran, the guitar player, who you know.
Vox and Hops alumni. Yeah.
Exactly. Who was also in a black metal band.
Yes, Bane. Black metal. Serbian Bane, yes.
Yeah. Black metal and new metal.
That's why I was surprised when he was a part of it, because he's just really extreme.
He is, but this is where what I say, like, if you love music in general, you'll love all genres of music. Like, there's no superior genre, really. But anyways, so that he loved everything that Robbie was doing. However, he wanted singing in this band as well, because Bran has this great mind for music, and he writes great choruses musically that You can do so much vocally that's just going to sound like this could be on the radio. And he was like, you know, I think it's a missed opportunity if we don't have singing in this band. And he asked Robbie like how he felt about having another vocalist in the band. And they were essentially thinking like another male vocalist. So like, I guess Linkin Park 2.0. But I helped him out with a like another song. So like the third song that he sent in, which was Make Believe, our first single. And we wrote that song with two vocalists in mind. And we sent it over to Bran, and he loved it. And then suddenly that was on the table. Like, can we ask Vicky to join this band? Like, does this make sense? And so Robbie and I were talking about it. And initially I was like, I don't know. This is really weird. This is so different from everything that anyone even knows me for. But then like that reason, the reason I wouldn't do it, became the reason that I wanted to do it, because you don't want to be in another band that sounds like exactly like what your current band is in. Like, that's stupid.
No.
And a lot of people
do that. Yeah. We probably have the same person in mind, but I'm not going to say that.
Oh, I have a few people in mind. But damn, who do you have in mind?
I'll tell you after when I'm not recording.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I would never do that, because I think it's a waste of ideas and a waste of like your focus is split. You could be putting all that into one band when mm-hmm. it's similar sounding.
Absolutely.
Whereas this is an opportunity for me to do something that, you know, I can't do in The Agonist. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. But I love it and I listen to it all the time. So why not do this? And who cares what anyone has to say about it? Yeah.
What is the plans for this? Is it something that's gonna tour? Is it gonna get a record, like a label behind it? What are your goals mm-hmm. with Sixth Sense? Because Agonist is gonna be, as soon as the world opens up again, you're gonna mm-hmm. be busy.
They are gonna be busy, but here's another thing. It's like I'm the only person in The Agonist that's a full-time musician. Mm-hmm. So let's say The Agonist finishes a tour. Everyone goes back home. They go back to whatever other job they're doing. They can't just like quit their jobs and go on the road for like a year long. I can do that. So it's not an obstacle for me, because there are going to be times when The Agonist is at home and I can go on a different tour. I can do something else. So I think that solves that issue. And I think as long as there's open communication and honesty about it, then it's cool. Like our first music video with Sixth Sense was filmed by Chris Kells.
Yes,
who was in The Agonist. Yeah.
He's the best.
And the second one, he is the best. And the second one that we're going to release in a few months is also filmed by him. So obviously we're good.
Is this the beginning of something that's going to happen though? And I'm just,
I think so.
I'm thinking more like, about, are we going to have a real Vicky Sirakis solo project one day?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not there yet for that, because I'm so ridiculously busy with everything else. Like, yeah. I can't add another thing. Mm-hmm. But obviously, to close like the Sixth Sense chapter, I'm very serious about it. I'm at that point in my life where I don't do things that I'm not serious about, because I don't have the time for it.
Good.
And because we are funding this ourselves, like you mentioned, there's no label or anything like that. I'm not going to spend money that I earned on something that I'm not serious about. So we're all very serious about it. And I think there's huge potential with it. And it's been a long time coming. We're taking it slow. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we have more songs recorded, many more songs recorded, but we're not putting them out because attention span. Like, if I put it out right now, this community here that's here today, my patrons and Twitch and all that, would listen to it, of course. But how many people would truly listen to it? So like, we're going step by step, we're taking it slow, we're releasing singles, potentially an EP, and we'll see. Like, we're not going to put all that music out all at once. So we're very serious about it. And the next single will probably drop maybe end of the year, maybe beginning of next year. Probably soon after like the whole like agonist stuff starts dying out a little bit, it's like, boom, I'm going to put something else out with Sixth Sense.
Smart. So I like that. But is there a goal to do this independently to retain? Like, is it one of those? Because there are a lot of bands that are doing this. I just had a chat with Carcosa. You know, Shadow of Intent are killing it.
Being independent.
Is this basically something that you're inspired by, or do you want a label?
It's not that we don't want a label, but we do want the right label. And the right deal, because it's not just about the right label, like the right, like labels don't offer all their bands the same deal.
That's correct.
And you have to read the fine print in the deal that you get. And, not just that, it's this band is a little bit more rock oriented. It's like, it's not like extreme metal like the Agonist is. And my contacts and the label that I'm currently with, Napalm, and my world in general is more metal. It's the metal world. So I'm kind of trying to wait and see what we can do with Sixth Sense in more of a rock world. And if we find a label that happens to have like similar sounding bands or bands that we can see ourselves touring with, and they give us like a contract that makes sense, that doesn't like completely steal all our rights and offer us nothing in return, we will take it. And as I've said to many people before, I'm not stingy. I have no problem giving anyone anything. I'm like, if you give me the right people and it's like, here's 50% of my salary, but you guys are doing all the work that I don't want to do and you're doing it right, I will happily give away half of my money. Here you go. Take care of all this bullshit that I don't care for, but do it right. Then I'll give the money away, but it's really hard to find that.
Absolutely. So I'm excited for this. I've heard the tracks, that they're good. They're catchy as hell.
Thank you. So just
keep being patient and playing smart, because that's what you do. And I love that about you.
Mm-hmm.
Back into the world of beer, if you could make another collab, a Vicky beer, what beer would it be? What style? And what would you call it?
Oh man, I don't know what I would call it, but I would definitely do a stout.
I know you love
it. Because that. Yes. Well, I'm drinking one right now. I'm already feeling that 13%. I wouldn't do a 13% stout. I'd do something like 9%, maybe 8-9%, you know, let's not go crazy. Preferably very chocolatey or coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I love. I'm a huge coffee addict, so for the taste, not for the caffeine. So same thing with beer. A nice thick stout. What would I call? I don't know. I haven't given that too much thought. What would you call it?
I'm thinking about it now. Vicky's Stout Rackus, but. I don't know.
That's a new nickname.
Stout Rackus, I think.
Oh,
Vicky,
my God.
The Stout Rackus. That's just me. I typically ask this question, and I had Johnny from Carcosa on, and he's just as busy as you on socials and everything. He's killing it. You're killing it. So this question makes no sense, because I know what you've been doing, but I'm always curious because it's different, right? I'm very lucky. I have the podcast. Right before I sit down, I do these interviews. I have that same feeling that I would get before stepping onto stage, that little goosebumps, the pit in my stomach, going to the bathroom one too many times before it starts. It's exactly like playing a show. So I ask this question frequently. I call it, how have you been filling the void of performing? But you do this all the time.
I do.
is there anything that does it really live up to an onstage experience?
It's different for sure. I think this is way easier to do because you said it actually, like, I don't know exactly what the words you chose, but before you started recording, when we first hooked up here, you said something that you're like, I'm in your territory or I'm in your space.
I was in your house.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's the thing. When you're streaming from your house, from your home, it feels a little bit more comfortable because you can't actually visually see the people there that are watching you. They're behind the screen. So yeah, you don't know. So you don't, as a person that's like shy or maybe introverted or has stage fright or anything like that, you get less of that because exactly click. You don't see their faces. Like, how many times has, I don't know if this has happened to you because you guys play like a different kind of metal that's like more intense, but like, has it happened to you, for example, that you're playing a show and there's this one person in the crowd that's like looking at you and they look like they're bored out of their mind?
Yeah, yeah, that happens. Definitely, definitely. They might have just had a bad day though, you know?
Yes, but then I'm saying like that same person comes up to you later on and says that was a killer gig.
Exactly.
And you're like, really?
Really?
You liked it?
You have like, resting bitch face, you know? Like.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't get to see that. I don't see that face from anyone, so it's easier to do. And I'm just I'm thinking in my head that everyone's having a blast behind their screens, and that's it. So for shows, it's a little bit, it can be hard to ignore that. Like if I think of like the best shows that I've had in my life, they're not based on my performance. They're based on the crowd's performance.
That's true. That's true. That's that back and forth between the crowd and the band that makes a show special. That's true. One last question, probably doesn't happen to you very, very often because, you know, you're really, really fucking busy, but, you know, if you drink too many 13.2% stouts, every once in a while it happens to everyone. So I'm curious, what is your hangover cure?
I don't really get a hangover anymore. Not with beers. Maybe if I go on tour again and I start mixing different alcohols in one night. But I think the fact that I'm a singer or a vocalist helps me in not getting that because I drink so much water. Like, I'm the type of person that between a beer, while I'm drinking a beer, I'll be drinking water. So I wake up the next day and I'm okay, usually. Because I think, don't they say that, like, you need to drink double the amount of water of what alcohol you've had?
Yeah, hydration, yeah. All the time.
Yeah. And I don't drink water for the alcohol. I just drink it because, like, when you use your voice so much in a day... So it's like I'm using my voice when I'm talking and I'm talking a lot on stream and this and that. And then I'm doing vocals, too. So it's like I'm constantly using my voice. So I constantly have to drink water. So, yeah, I guess I'm a bit blessed in that. Whereas I've literally seen people plow back beers and not have like one drip of water, like one sip, nothing. And it's like those are the people that wake up the next day and they look like they've been hit by a train.
You must have to pee a lot, so I pee
that's
a lot.
That's the bad thing about tour.
Especially being a female, that's one thing for a female. That's really difficult on tour because we have our bottles that we get to stow away in the van somewhere. But
I don't have that. I was gonna say the number of times that I've heard like Kels say in the van, like we gotta stop. Vicky has to pee. You know. Too much.
I love him. I love him. Vicky, thank you so much for taking the time hanging out with me, talking about life, metal, and craft beer again. Everyone, listen to that brand new Agonist EP, Days Before the World Wept. Came out via Napalm Records. Killer, killer EP. We're going to keep hanging out here on Twitch. So if you're listening to the podcast version of this, you missed out. You should have been here because there's way more content coming that you're not going to be a part of. Vicky, thank you so much. Cheers.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. This was an absolute blast. Man, did we ever have fun. We continued hanging out for another few hours before my family came back and I had to finally jump off of it. We were raided by Samus. It was just super sick, super fun, very cool to hang out with Vicky and her amazing community that she's built on Twitch. I'm all about it. Always a pleasure to hang with Vicky. Very, very excited to perform alongside her at Brutal Montreal coming up on December 17th here in Montreal. Just want to say a huge thank you to Vicky for opening up her home and allowing me to conduct this interview on her Twitch channel. It was truly, truly a blast. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should absolutely sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, the mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's VOXANDHOPS.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past
last week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I dropped throughout that past week, if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast, all the pertinent information for any cool projects I have in the works, as well as the updated links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is curated by my man Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself, and is available on both Apple Music and Spotify. Now, there's just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, I would hate for you to miss a single thing, because I know you're going to love it. So please, please sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have one more episode coming up this Friday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.